ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back.
What up, H-Town, on a partly sunny Tuesday afternoon in America's fourth largest, soon to be third largest city. It is Joel here, to my right, Barry there, and behind the glass, Nick over there, as we are your entertainment for the next 3 hours up until 4 o'clock. And I guess, Barry, write two things.
Well, soon to be third largest? I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
they're close.
Yeah.
Population-wise, I believe that they're waiting for another census, but they're already there.
Is it like a metro area that they,
yeah,
I'm sure
they're
count.
Overtaking Chicago, which to me, I think, is really surprising. But
not really. Nobody wants
have to. If you've been to Chicago and you realize that is a massive metropolis of a down. Like when we talk about city, like Houston, because there's no zoning, it spreads out all over the place. Chicago, down in the downtown area and such, it is massive.
That's crazy.
It's a great city.
It's crazy that, like, now I think the top, like, four of the top 10 cities in the nation are all in Texas. Because San Antonio's up there, Dallas.
San Antonio get that high?
Yeah, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, and Houston. All top 10 cities in the nation.
I know Dallas is. I didn't know San Antonio.
Yeah, Dallas always has been. I didn't know San Antonio crawled. And Austin, because of, they call it Little Hollywood now. And I think Matthew McConaughey and, what's her name? The big time, Sandra Bullock.
Oh.
They love Austin, so they started filming movies there. And then even my sister, who lives in Wisconsin, in Madison, of all people, we've heard a lot of good things about Austin. We're thinking about retiring there. I go, have you ever been there?
Yeah.
I heard a lot of great things. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey and those people, they like to hang out. I'm like, that's why it got, why Austin's got, Nick, you go there all the time. That's why it got so expensive.
Yeah, I used to go there when it was significantly cheaper, but I wonder if that happens, though. Someone actually chooses to retire somewhere in a city they've never been, but, you know, they're looking at these brochures and these beautiful pictures online, and then they get there like, what?
That's why New Yorkers all go to Florida.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They always say that, you know, the Florida is the New York vacation capital of the world.
In retirement. That's why there's so many old people in Florida.
Yep.
They all retire down there and don't root for the Marlins.
No, or any of the other teams, by the way. Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting, but, you know, the city is growing, and we are, as people like to say, we are a major market radio presence in this big city. And with that comes scrutiny and the things that come with having three major teams playing sports and having a first-place football team. And, Barry, I haven't gotten your thoughts on it yet, but after Sunday's kind of, I would say, debacle, except for the fact that they won, but doing something that we had been talking about for quite a while that needed to be done, whether it be like it happened, pulling Brock Osweiler in the middle of a game just to send a message, or if you just flat out sit him down and you put Savage in. I think this was best case scenario. I did not expect the kind of quote machine that we got from the always politically correct Texans, but Mr. McNair, first of all, starting it out by saying he has three, we found out we have three quality quarterbacks. I'm still only counting one and a half.
Yeah. Bob's drunk. Yep. That's the only thing I could think when I heard that quote. Bob's drunk. Now we know we got three good quarterbacks. Well, all right, Bob. So, let's pump the brakes on that.
Was Whedon ever good? Except for the fact that he was a 27-year-old first-round pick that had played baseball?
Yeah, that's it. It's just throwing that word good around.
Yeah.
Like, no.
So that's crazy to me. And then the other one is, you know, the gutsy decision that Bill O'Brien made, and we were just kind of, I was thinking about it on the way in and then kicking it around as we were walking in the studio to bring up with you guys, but the way the playoff scenarios play out, this is a glorified preseason game. Win or lose against Cincinnati, right? If you beat Tennessee, you win the division because of your divisional record and the tiebreakers. So essentially, where was the stressful decision, gutsy call? It was a gutsy call, I get it, to bench him in the Jacksonville game, but gutsy call to make him the starter this week, I think is the easiest no-brainer in the world.
Well, I think the gutsy call was to bench Osweiler, according to McNair. And I think there's something to that because not that it's gutsy, it was the right move, but when you're paying that much money for a quarterback, I think what Bob might have meant was, hey, look, he knows how much we're paying for this kid. and he still benched him. And he, you know, that does take some cojones from a head coach, which there's tons of arguments and there's tons of speculation on, was Brock, you know, Bill O'Brien's guy, or was this a Rick Smith, Bob McNair thing? I tend to lean more Rick Smith, Bob McNair, because if you recall, it was Bob McNair that led the charge and said, we will get a quarterback this year, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Right.
Now, that doesn't leave you with many options when you don't have a good draft pick to go get one, and there's not a ton of free agents to be had. So he kind of backed the team in a corner by saying that, which the fans were clamoring for it, so it's why he said it. So long story short, here we are 1 year later. There's Brock Osweiler and all his money, and because the fans asked for it and McNair said they would do it. You don't know if this was O'Brien's guy for sure unless you get someone that was in the room when the decisions were made and can corroborate the story. I have a hunch, though. I don't think it was this guy. I honestly don't. So I think that that's where that kind of subtle...
You don't think it was McNair's guy?
No, I don't think it was O'Brien's guy. So I think that's why he's saying, you know, it took a lot of guts for him to bench a guy that we're paying all this money for in the game to bring in a backup who's only played in two games. I would agree with that to a certain degree, but that's his job to make those calls. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it takes guts. It just takes smarts.
Yeah, but when you're... And I agree with you. I just think that that particular game, just because it's that particular team, the mm-hmm. Jaguars, and the fact that they were down 13-0, and he had already thrown two interceptions, I just think that relieved the pressure of making that call.
Sure. It was a no-brainer. I mean, I was asking for this like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
I was too.
On Twitter. I'm like, can they please just bench this dude? He's horrible.
Right. And everybody was worried about his psyche, and I said, then do it in the middle of a game.
No,
because
yeah.
then it sends a message.
Yeah, that was the thing, is he needed that message. Now, I'll be honest with you guys. I was surprised to find that Savage would be starting this week. Not from a standpoint of what he did, because I think if you watch the two play just in that game, it's the right call to put Tom Savage in as
Agreed.
The starting quarterback. But I was surprised he did it because I didn't think that they would go away from the money man that quickly.
Well, and here's the thing. And Travis was completely pro, got to go with the hot hand, just like we were having the Prescott Romo discussions, that you got to go with the hot hand, and that's why you go with Savage. I was with you
from
the standpoint of, you know, because Brock's the big money guy. But then I was also from the standpoint of, you start thinking about it going, well, on the flip side, it's easier to put the kid in with a lack of experience, and if he fails early, he's not going to have his feelings hurt if you take him out. Brock might even get an extra boost of confidence going, now they really need me, they can count on me, I can make a difference. Could be a good, big thing. But I regressed a little bit this morning by thinking, looking at all the playoff scenarios, this game against Cincinnati means absolutely nothing either way, and they can still win the division and get in the playoffs. So basically this was, hey, we're going to put Savage back in there because we basically have a glorified preseason game to see if he is capable and what we're really going to do when we have to make a tough call. This would have been a lot tougher call if Tennessee was this week.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But I still say, you know, you – because what if he goes out there and lays an egg early? Now you have, despite what Bob McNair says, you have zero quarterbacks.
I disagree. See, but that's why it's easier.
If he goes out and sucks –
Savage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you know you've got three quarterbacks that suck.
I think, but Brock then gets a boost of energy and goes, because, you know, he's constantly Mr. Locker Room guy and team guy. He gets this boost of energy, goes, they need me. I can come in and be the savior, and I can resurrect all of this, all the wrongs, and make it right.
But here's the thing, and I don't want to run us into the break. A boost of energy isn't what he needs. He needs more accurate passes, and the psyche isn't going to help him do that.
Down receivers.
Yeah, but that's not going to help him. It may help his confidence, but it's not going to help his ability.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But again, the spin of the media, as it's done on Kirby and elsewhere, as they try and get you to believe what they want you to believe, but there's a lot more behind the scenes, and we'll see how it all plays out. But we got a big show, lots of stuff to talk about. Rockets riding 10 in a row, have the Spurs in town tonight. Barry, who is the assistant to Commissioner Adam Silver on the new commission for, shall I say, Travelocity. If you're jumping on a bandwagon, you better do it before Christmas. Otherwise, your ticket will not be accepted. That and more, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Hi, my name is Bob.
and I approve this message.
I got the magic in me. Every time I touch that track, it turns.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4 o'clock as we welcome you in and thank you for listening. It is a season-long season of giving, but during the holiday season, we always like to give thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of our shows. And with that, I always remind you that if you do want to take part in today's show, 713-780-ESPN, where you can text us and Barry will keep his finger on the pulse of the text messages. You can call and join the show directly through Nick, and or you can tweet us on Twitter throughout the show, and we're pretty good about not only seeing your tweets, but if they're good, mentioning them on air and also responding. At Barry is funny, at No Hit Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. We were talking about the Texans before the break. Barry, getting your thoughts on a game that I think we were all a little bit surprised by. You know, I'm watching both games at the same time, taping the Texans game, and I watched the Texans game subsequently 2 and 3 times just to go over certain plays. But when I saw the crawl the first time that said Osweiler replaced in the second quarter, I literally raised an eyebrow. I was like, wow, that's pretty early. And I did see the score. When I went back and watched it the 3 times, the one thing that I kept going back to was the first interception. I just didn't think, look, for all week, that's very easy to criticize about Brock. And Nick, we talked about it yesterday a little bit. I just felt like to get that ball over the hands on the line of scrimmage, it had to be a little higher. Fuller got 2 hands on it. Yes, it would have been a tough catch. But to put that solely on Brock and then say he threw back-to-back picks, if you just are someone at the airport and you get that update, you're like, oh, he did it again, like stare at a guy and threw it right between the numbers. That first pick was tough to tag solely on Brock. And Nick, I know you said he could have thrown it, thought maybe asked could he throw it a little lower. Barry, I'm interested in your opinion. I just thought that first pick was not really one that I would say was a bad throw by Brock.
No, I think they were both his. I mean, in my opinion, he's there on the broadcast. You even heard the announcer say, well, he was trying to get it over the guy in front of him, a linebacker that was dropped in coverage. No, he wasn't. That guy wasn't even close. It was a bad throw. It was a throw we've seen him make 1,000 times poorly. Right. I mean, how many times have we seen an interception that has sailed over the receiver's head and then fall into the hands of a defender that's behind the play by 10 yards? So this was another one. The difference was, is maybe Fuller.
I thought this one was intentional.
It'd be different if we never saw that from Brock, but that's a consistent theme.
Yeah, it's kind of been his MO.
And what he does, he overthrows receivers into interceptions or underthrows them into interceptions, but astoundingly,
the ball that sails high is his.
There are a ton of those.
Yeah.
And so, it'd be different if most of his balls are in the dirt, if he's dropping them and he's, you know.
Put that one right next to Travis.
It'd be different if that were the case, if most of what he throws was low. But it's not. And so that's why I looked at that and said, well, that's typical Brock right there.
So here's what I did. When I went back and looked at the tape, right, a lot of his that sail high and float are when he gets happy feet, he's getting pressured, he tries to step up in the pocket, the elbow drops, he kind of goes sidearm, and it just it has a life of its own when it leaves his hands. This one looked like he planted the back foot, good mechanics, saw that, you know, D linemen had their hands in the air, got to put it just a little higher. That's why I thought premeditated, this was a better throw than the ones you're talking about, because there's no doubt the floater is his to own. He's given us enough tape to show you that's what his mantra is. He likes to let them fly and they end up high. But I just thought this one wasn't directly on him. But I think that this was also kind of the push comes to shove. It was a culmination of all those other things to where even if it was him really trying to throw that ball where he threw it, it's still based on all the things he had done, and then followed up with another one when they knew they needed. And the second one was awful.
I will say that there was a few people in the press box that shared your sentiment and thought, no, that first one is not on Brock. But I think the second one was so just.
And if you go back and look at the second one, it's exactly what we were just talking about, the floater. He steps up in the pocket. He feels the heat. So what does he do? He goes sidearm. The elbow is almost higher than where the palm of his hand is. And when he lets it go, it's like a submarine pitcher. It's already on its way up, and it has no touch on it at all to get anywhere near the receiver. He's trying to get like a rainbow. He has to get it over the linebacker to drop it in front of the defensive back and throws it right between the numbers on a defender, and it was like, man, that was awful.
And I think the key that you use there is touch. And that, to me, was a big difference between these two quarterbacks in this game. I mean, the first deep ball that Savage throws was to Williams, and he dropped a dime.
Yeah, he really did. Between,
I mean, he put that in a window. Brock Osweiler doesn't make that throw 1 out of 10 times, I don't believe. No. Watching him.
Fair to say that if Brock Osweiler tries that throw, he overthrows it?
He overthrows it. He underthrows it. It's intercepted. There's a ton of – but I don't think he can drop that ball in there. I just don't think – he's like Ryan Mallett, where Mallett had one speed that he threw the ball. That's what Brock Osweiler is. And, you know, Dre dropped a touchdown pass. Hopkins had a ball in his hands from Savage, and he drops it. And, again, Savage – perfect pass. If Dre can't catch it, nobody's catching it. And I'm telling you, time and time again, that's what I noticed more than anything watching Savage. Not a perfect game. Had a couple of balls that should have been intercepted that were dropped by the Jags.
Yeah, that's what I said too. Yeah, yesterday.
But watching him throw, more often than not, the placement of the ball was it's either going to be incomplete or a Texan was going to catch it. And that is the complete opposite of what you
I'll
get
give you the other
from
complete
Brock
opposite
Osweiler.
On Brock, which I think his teammates noticed the most, too, his composure. In the pocket, he never seemed riled. He never got happy feet. If it wasn't there and he couldn't find a seam or a gap to create time stepping up or getting outside, he threw it away.
Yeah, and that's the decision-making to throw it away was another good thing that I noticed.
Yep, that was good. But I'm saying even when he was feeling the heat, he never got rattled. Like, he made the throw where he knew he could make a throw that would give them a chance, whether it was completed or not. Whereas when Brock gets happy feet, man, it's this thing's a hot potato. I got to get rid of it, and this is a bad situation. He seemed like he was always calm. And I think as a teammate in the locker room, you see that and go, oh, this guy, he might have a little of that it factor to where if he's got composure and he doesn't get rattled, that's a big, big feather in the cap for being a good quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with being around for your third year. He's technically, I mean, he's still a rookie in terms of games played, but he's been around the system. He's been around the NFL. He's been on the sidelines. So that helps, I think, from a composure standpoint. I'm not telling you he wasn't nervous. I'm sure that dude was a nervous wreck going into that game. But I'll tell you what, who's not getting a lot of credit and who's not, people aren't talking about, that I've heard over the last 2 days, and that's the offensive line. They did, we hammer them and we talk about how bad they play week in and week out. But when you have what happened in that game where your starter is benched, you got a guy coming in for his third NFL regular season game, that pocket stayed clean most of the time for him. And that was a big that had a lot to do with the success that Savage had.
Well, granted,
was because they protected. He did have a couple of times where he had to run,
and that's because he made the good decisions. Lengthened the play anyway by
those are more coverage
around
sacks.
Too,
I mean, you can't give a dude 20 seconds; it's not going to happen. Those are more coverage related than offensive line breakdowns. But they deserve a lot of credit for what they did, especially given the circumstances of what happened.
I'll say the one thing that really that Travis and I talked about yesterday that to your point. This is a guy that studied hard when he wasn't on the field because you could tell during every situation he knew every read. He knew every one of his progressions. He knew exactly what to do, who to look for, and if it got too hot in the kitchen to throw it away, he was studying when he was in that quarterback room and those film studies. He wasn't Ryan Malleting, right? You weren't worried about an alarm clock and how much coffee he had. This kid paid attention to the point where when his number was called, he not only was ready – but he knew every bit of the progressions and the knowledge he had to have to be successful, which, to his credit, is something that a lot of young kids don't do when they come in this league because they expect it all to be either handed to them or that they should be anointed because of how they came out of college. So that's big for him. All right, Barry got his pros and cons from Sunday. We got to get those out of the way. So we want to talk to you about that. And
I'm curious to know, who's your MVP of this team right now? Because there's no, I don't think there's a clear cut guy. So maybe on the other side,
let's talk about that.
You tell
too.
Me who your
think
MVP
about who
is.
You think your MVP is. I know who I said earlier in the year. Does that change now? It may. It may change sides of the ball based on how they're playing. They're the number one defense in the NFL, kids. Do you know that? If you don't, better pay attention. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4 o'clock. I was going to ask you guys, did you hear the soundbite from Brock after the decision was made that basically said it was Tom Savage to start, and he basically, he's kind of like, I'm trying to get the right guy. You guys are more into the movies and sitcoms than I am, but he's kind of like, and one you will not get, Nick, he's Eddie Haskell, but from a more kind of believably honest perspective. He's the guy that no matter what happens, he sees the sunshine and rainbows. Because he came out and was like, while he wanted to sell you a car or boat, he said, you know, guys, I've been through this situation before, and, you know, I've been through it, and it's worked out. And sometimes those situations are what motivates a team. When they get motivated, it's that last little bit that gets them over the top so they can play the way they need. So we just go along. And I'm like, I'm just going, come on, man. If you got a ticker at all and you're competitive, you're ticked off, man. You should be.
Yeah, but I guess you just didn't want to show it. I mean, even in the locker room.
Remember,
like, yeah,
who he plays for.
Well, ideally, that's the exact response you want control from the owner and the media department, without question, and the coach.
Yeah.
This is Belichick speak, like, to a T.
I'm disappointed, but...
I guarantee you, at that quarterback meeting room, O'Brien was in there, and he was like, all right, guys, Savage is starting. Brock, I need you to memorize this script, because you're going to be asked about it, and this is what you're going to say. I mean, I would almost be willing to bet you it went down exactly like that.
I don't doubt, like, especially when you look at old all the Patriots tape that comes out, too, especially with the younger players, and the rookies aren't allowed to speak. But I would absolutely tell you that in their lockers in that time before the media is allowed in, there are bullet points daily that you say, like, from a young guy's perspective, go from training camp on, go listen to the Patriots. Any young guy that a media person corners at the right time just to get a quote, you're going to hear, I'm just trying to get better every day. I'm just trying to learn from my teammates, be the best teammate I can be.
Yeah.
And we're on to, and then insert next game opponent here. Those are the three things that they're allowed to say. And I think to your guys, I mean, from the standpoint of what you can speak about, I'm pretty sure that there's bullet points that says stick to the script. Here are the three things you can talk about.
Yep.
So from that perspective, I want to hear your breakdown. As you said, you were taking notes as you watched.
Yeah.
Break it down for me in terms of the pros and the cons of the Jags game.
Of the Jags game?
Yep.
So I think the pros is obviously the change at quarterback and the fact that he took care of the ball and he got DeAndre Hopkins involved. I really felt like you saw a different Nuke out there. His body language, he didn't look agitated when he missed a ball. There was a couple balls that he dropped. There was a missed first down where if he would have just kept running forward, he gets the first down. So he made some mistakes, but his body language was like completely different. It was a 180 from what we've seen in the past couple of weeks where he looks frustrated on every throw. So that's a big positive, having him feeling like, hey, man, I got somebody that can get the ball to me. This is fun again.
Yeah, it was good to see him get close to 100 yards receiving, to be a big part of the offense. And I'll tell you what, we talked about it yesterday. Now, I would say at length, but a good portion of a segment. Jalen Ramsey's one hell of a football player. That matchup between those two guys was all world to watch, and the game within the game. Yeah. That was fantastic.
That was a lot of fun. So I think Savage and Savage's play and getting, you know, Hopkins and the rest of the team involved. The O-line play was a positive for me. Clowney obviously was a positive. I mean, the defense as a whole is just playing lights out for these guys. I mean, if you think about it, they had 20 points. Seven of those came on a special teams touchdown. So that drops you down to, 13?
Right.
And 10 of those 13 came off of interceptions from Brock before he got pulled. The first one led to a field goal. The second one led to a touchdown. So you can't even pin all of those 20 points on the defense. Really and truly, on their own, they gave up a field goal drive. That's what they gave up on their own. Now, I'm not saying those other two drives, if they punt, that they don't score. But I tell you what, if you're turning the ball over on your half of the field, it certainly doesn't do the defense any favors. So I think they deserve some credit for the fact that all 20 of those points aren't on them.
Especially, for sure.
Especially that special teams. That defense, even if you're going to give them the turnovers, that defense gave up 13 and not 20.
Well, and from the Clowney perspective, I went off yesterday saying, this guy has matured. This guy has been huge. This guy, and the turning point to me was, and Trapp from a very much we perspective and a former player perspective was going to be a little bit guarded on this, But let's go back and remember the J.J. Watt that anytime he was asked about Jadeveon Clowney for the last 2.5, 3 years was like, I don't know, you have to ask the trainers. I don't know, you'll have to ask the coaches. And even when the media said, you guys were in the weight room at the same time, how'd he look? I didn't notice him. I was doing my thing. To Sunday, when he was slapping him on the back and bro-hugging him and yelling him encouragement, and the announcers were saying, these guys are talking about, hey, you got to be healthy, and you got to be healthy because we want to play together for the first time ever next year to see what we really have. You think about that. They've never really been together to play on the same D-line as a unit and what that could be like. That in itself is impressive, but the fact that J.J. seems to have turned the corner and has been very much saying how supportive and how much he wants Jadeveon around, that's a night and day from where it was when he was first asked about Clowney. That tells you how much Clowney's matured, and then I followed it up by saying in his post-game conference, what I liked the most was Jadeveon was always best talking about Jadeveon, and when they talked about, hey, you got 5 sacks, when he goes, I can do more, and I need to get more sacks, that's when I know he's kind of taken a step too.
But he stood out. I mean, he shined. And Quentin Demps with another interception that puts him now like sixth in the NFL with his 4 interceptions.
They didn't know that.
Yeah, but Clowney playing like the number one pick that we expected the last couple of games. Now, can he maintain this for years to come? That's the thing. But the last couple of games, he has played like he was deserving of being the number one pick, and that's good. The bads that I have, that was my goods, and Nick Novak, another good. You know, him, what he was, 4 for 4?
Toughing it out.
Yeah.
With the back issues?
And playing hurt. So the bad, it was special teams coverage again, still subpar, giving up the touchdown on the kickoff. I think the play calling was... go ahead.
Before you get off that one, though, watching it for the second time, because he had to kick off and he seemed to really, that was when he was really in a lot of pain, it was a line drive. It wasn't the normal looping high into the end zone. Can you put that on the fact that he just kind of said, okay, no one else can kick this thing to the end zone. I'll do it. But it was a bullet, and it gave the guy a running start to where he could just take off.
I mean, I'm no special teams X's and O's guy, but it didn't, to me, it didn't look like the Texans stayed in their lane. It looked like they collapsed to the middle of the field. And if you look at the return, it was all down the sideline.
It was straight down the sideline. But that's what I'm saying. He got a running start.
That doesn't happen.
And instead of like kicking it high enough to give the guys coverage time to get down there, it was like the ball got on him so fast. He was already at the 25 when the coverage team started getting around him, and he just, like you said, he just went straight down one sideline.
Yeah, I don't put that on the kick necessarily. That may set up a big return, but a touchdown, that's just a breakdown.
I give him credit for trying to make a tackle too with a bad back.
So my bads were special teams coverage. I still say there was some questionable play calling. The fade route on 4th and goal.
Oh, we were all over it yesterday.
That should not have happened. The flea flicker. Why are you running a flea flicker with a dude who's only played in 2+ games in the NFL? Why are you doing that? That's a wasted down. Like, just let that dude set up. He's been doing okay reading the defense. There were some calls when you felt like they should have run the ball. It seems like they do that all the time. Here would be a good place to run or set up a screen, and they don't do that. And then the last one was red zone scoring. Still atrocious. Still terrible. It doesn't matter who's in quarterback. Right now, this team is deficient in the red zone.
And the fade was ridiculous on 4th and 1, because at least if you try and run it, you're not going to get beat up. But if you try, and I said to Trap, let it be play action. Savage has got some legs. Let him roll out. You've got... where even if the play called breaks down, you can break off a route and have a chance that some guy's going to break with some space, and or he might even be able to run it in. But when you throw that, it's only one-on-one, and it's got to be the right spot, and your chances of completing that aren't as high as the other options. I just thought it was a horrible
call. And not only
that,
I mean, there's not the chemistry there. That's not the guy that's been working on that play in practice with Nuke, you know, week in and week out. So, yeah, that's a timing thing right there. That's knowing where he's going to be by feel.
Let's take Greg, who has been holding patiently, wanting to talk about Brock Osweiler. What's up, Greg?
Hey, how you doing?
How's it going, Greg?
Look, I'm going to make it quick and short, okay? Brock Osweiler, from my observation, from when he was at Denver, I looked at him and he was always a one-half man. Either it was the first half or second half. So when Houston gave him all his money, my son, he's a Texan fan, and he was like, man, Pops, I don't understand it. I think that Savage could help them until they find a quarterback. He said this way back. So what I'm saying is that they gave this man this money for no reason. And, you know, my dad had a saying, if you see a sucker, bump him in the head. Houston was suckers. He bumped him in the head. He took the money, and now they have to pay for it. That's all I have to say. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the call. What I would say to that is I wouldn't say they gave him the money for nothing. I would say that kind of what Barry was saying in the first segment, when you start talking about the fact that, you know, your target until your guy comes along or targeting your guy or waiting for the right guy, which is why you had to endure Mallett and Hoyer and Fitzpatrick and all these other guys up and down the line. But then the fans started to make an uproar going, same thing keeps happening. Win the division, get in the playoffs, get knocked out, and the quarterback continues to be an issue, and Hoyer threw, you know, what, five interceptions. Hey, it's time to really get that guy. And I think they panicked because there was so much pressure to add the one missing piece that was supposedly the piece to get you over the hump, and it's failed miserably.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. Everyone's saying how this is a poor move. At the time, it was the only play. That's it. It was the only play.
They had to make a splash.
Unless you were going
to
stand pat and bring back Hoyer or go get Fitzpatrick because he was, you know, a free agent, you were going to have to do this. That's what it, I mean, they had no other choice. At the time, it was the only move. You had to find out if it was going to be the right move. But at the time,
yeah, I mean,
it was the only
play. And
again,
we go back
play.
And forth. They could have drafted somebody, but that guy's not going to be NFL ready right off the top. And
no,
with
you're
the
wasting,
rest of the roster, pretty talented.
Remember, the thought is you're wasting J.J. Watt's prime if you don't go get a quarterback. Remember that. I think that's where the decision comes
from. By the
way,
did you guys see Chris Sims? Chris Sims came out and said that this is the move that pushes the Texans over the top and makes them a legitimate Super Bowl
contender. I did see that.
Well, we can talk about that if you'd like as well. We've got plenty to talk about. We're going until 4 o'clock. Still got a lot of gas left in the tank, and that's because Barry just finished lunch. So we can talk about anything you want to talk about. Rockets, Texans, lots of cheerleader things going on the sidelines that we can talk about, as well as some cheap shots and late hits. And maybe even a little security that was carrying a little extra artillery. All that and more, ESPN 97.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
All right, Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4, and Barry threw the question out a couple segments ago, so before we put a bow on our early Texans talk, want to know your thoughts on your MVP of your Houston Texans this season. Because early on, I said Lamar Miller, and that was when he was carrying the load, when they were winning games, when he was yards from scrimmage.
Yeah.
I think he's still in the top 6 rushing yards in the league.
He's
staying healthy. But based on everything this team has endured and the fact that they have the number one defense in the league, and you can see the difference between when he's on the field and when he's off the field, I may change my pick to Jadeveon Clowney.
Is that just a heat of the moment last couple of games?
I'm saying because decision? Of the fact, like, you know, I thought about this now because you gave me a little time, and the fact that I had said to you a while back when we were both surprised, hey, he was leading the league in tackles for loss.
Yeah.
You know, he was making a difference in terms of disrupting plays a lot in the backfield, even when he didn't make a tackle. He was pressuring the quarterback. I would have said Whitney Mercilus also would be right there. If anybody on the defensive side, I'd start with those two guys because everybody else has been hurt and for whatever reason is in and out of the lineup. And even Clowney's missed a game or two. But I would say overall, if I was going to say my MVP and I had to pick one guy, I probably would still stick with Miller because he hasn't gotten hurt, and he's been the main reason why the offense has still stayed with their head above water instead of drowning behind the bad passing game. But I would go in order of 1, 2, 3, I would go Miller, Clowney, and Mercilus.
So I have a feeling that my answer is going to surprise you guys.
I think mine would too. So
you want to go?
No, you go first. No, you go
okay.
First.
So I will say that Lamar Miller, week in and week out, has been the most consistent, Texan. Mm-hmm. And, like I said, 6th in rushing. The problem is he only has 5 touchdowns. So, but that again goes to their ineptness in the red zone. which is all part of the bigger problem. But that leads me to my MVP, who's Nick Novak. Where is this team right now without Nick Novak? He's won games for them on last scoring drive kicks. He's scoring in the red zone when the offense can't. They had, 2 weeks ago? 5 trips to the red zone? 1 touchdown? This past game? He's keeping them in it because they can't score. He's played hurt. He's literally won games on final kicks.
It's hard.
Division games. It's hard to argue with the fact kept them in. They are a bad 8-6 team. Score other than field goals.
What do you have? 5 makes in 1 game.
Yeah.
And if you miss in a couple of these games that they've won, one of those misses could have cost you a game or two. It's legitimate.
People are going to make fun of me. I get it.
No.
He has the second most field goals in the NFL.
You got the respect of not only your locker room, but the media who said kickers get a lot of bad raps for not really being football players. He played through pain and injury and still didn't miss when you needed him, when you were starting starting with a loaded deck against you down 13-0. And every single kick was huge because, again, he misses one down the stretch and now it's not a 1-score game with a chance to go up 1. Now you're needing 2 scores, an onside kick or a turnover. Things are different. Changes the whole landscape. You can give a lot of credence to Nick Novak.
Yeah, I mean, because there was a lot of games that we wouldn't have been nowhere. I said we, but Texans wouldn't have been nowhere.
Need I say this, too?
He is 29 to 31. The guy before him
was a guy that was first in line for being in the buffet line.
How many games did he lose?
Randy Bullock looked more like my wife and I went to a game one time. She goes, "What's that guy down there doing with that little
Bullock
number?"
Before was it? There was a guy in between Bullock and Novak, I believe.
I thought it went from Bullock to Novak.
It may have been. I thought there was a guy in between.
My wife always used to think he was a long snapper.
Yeah,
they were like, he's got a little number, but he's a big dude. I'm like, yeah, he's not pushing away from that buffet table.
Inside of 40, he's missed 2 kicks, and both of those were from between 40 and 49 this year.
Well, to emphasize your point, too.
So that's, he's 3 of 6 from 50-plus, not great. But again, it's 50-plus. Now, Justin Tucker is
One of those, too, was like end of the half.
From 50-plus. Yeah.
One of those was end of the half from like 56, 57. But to emphasize your point, how important the field goal kicker has been across the board because of the longer extra points, because of the fact that going into last night's game, they had a chance to have the most field goals made in a weekend in NFL history, shows you how important and how many guys are missing extra points, which means instead of going down to get a field goal to tie, you need a touchdown. And really screwing up kind of the numbers game that goes into the scoring when you need it late in a game. Kickers are important, so it's not a bad pick.
He's made 32 of 37. Obviously the 50-plus is what's got. But and a lot of people, you want to make fun of that. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when this team was terrible, their best player was their punter. Let's be real.
What's the worst pick, D-Hop or Nick Novak?
So who's your pick,
MVP?
Nick? Who's your pick?
D-Hop or DeAndre Hopkins or Nick Novak? What would you make more fun of?
DeAndre.
Yeah, just because simply he hasn't had anybody that can give him the ball. It's not his fault.
That's why.
But he's dropped his fair share, too.
Yeah.
Hop has more drops, significant drive.
Did he drop 2?
Ending drops, touchdowns.
He dropped the one deep ball kind of on the side of the end zone, and then he dropped the one with Ramsey in the other corner.
Over the middle.
Well, and the other touchdown, I'm saying. There was another one in the end zone on the other side where he and Ramsey were hand fighting, and it looked like he got it, and then on the way down, he dropped it.
When Brock was in the game, he was only targeted twice by Brock. The second Savage came over, he was targeted like 19 times. He went 8 for 13.
Yeah.
But you know what?
And Jalen Ramsey, I felt like, got credit last game for shutting him down, and then this game.
No. The best defender against DeAndre Hopkins has been Brock Osweiler.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And then he got
their
credit,
best defender.
Right. And then he got credit again leading up till Tom Savage took the helm. When Tom Savage came on, he was 8 for 13.
It's amazing.
Ramsey didn't really do anything.
It's amazing when you find a guy that can put the ball in the right spot where either your guy's going to catch it or no one does. That's those 50-50 balls and those other opportunities that we talk about week in and week out on this show.
And here's the other thing. When you talk about when Brock targeted DeAndre, it was either one of those, I'm staring at him the whole time right from the snap, or whenever push comes to shove and the pocket collapses, he only tries to find DeAndre. Whereas Savage knew his progressions, If it breaks down, here's my short route. Here's my in-between. Here's where I'm looking. And it didn't. He didn't focus solely on DeAndre, too. That helps both parties. That helps the quarterback, and it helps the defense to not sit on DeAndre all the time.
I think one question you got to ask yourself, how many corners built a reputation this season for quote-unquote shutting Hopkins down because the ball's just not coming his way?
Yeah.
Or it is, and to Barry's point, it's coming his way. It's just not in the atmosphere of where he can catch it. So
yeah,
interesting there. Did we lose Gorgonzola?
I guess we did. Yep.
Which is a cheese, by the
way. Correct. First of all, who are you telling? If there's something I know in this world, I'm pretty familiar with cheese.
Yeah. So two people are agreeing with me that Nick Novak is the MVP on text.
Yeah, I mean it's somebody not a bad
texted,
take at all.
I don't know if this is true, but somebody texted that they're 4-10 without Nick Novak. I don't know because you're still going to have a kicker, but I will tell you this: these last couple of games, he's keeping them in this divisional race.
I don't think you can go wrong with Novak or Lamar Miller because the knock on Lamar Miller was he couldn't stay healthy. He's been a workhorse for them. And you look at yards from scrimmage, yards just running the ball, top six in the NFL in running rushing yards. Hard to argue with either guy. They got it right with those two guys for sure. And it was money well spent in Lamar Miller's case. So we got plenty more to get to. We've got Texans talk if you still want. My man Clarence is probably just getting off of work because he wants to chime in on Barry's pick of Nick Novak. We'll get to that. Also want to talk about a lot of other things too. A lot of fun stories, a lot of good stories. Who's the leading candidate for the Rams job in LA? I believe I brought it up. I believe we talked about it, but now it seems like it may come to fruition. We'll talk about that and more. Is the Rams gain your loss if you're a football fan? That and more, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.